Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning, Blog Talk. Listen, this is Tom Hayes and Rebecca Tripp. How are you this morning, Rebecca?
I'm excellent, Tom.
Boy, this is fun. This is getting to be a regular thing. What a great week last week, huh?
Oh, we've had some wonderful guests. Wonderful guests.
Amazing.
You know, the word is spreading.
Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Eric, I'm telling you, that show about the UFOs, and then somehow I was led to some things on YouTube and to see those things actually becoming more prevalent right now. And I think you mentioned the same thing.
Yes, there seem to be more sightings right now than they've had in a while for some reason. And I think there's a lot of really interesting things coming out about possible disclosure that, you know, things that the governments know about UFOs could be coming our way.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, with everybody having access to cameras on their phones these days, it's pretty hard to have just a sighting when they can actually demonstrate, you know, video footage showing these craft. It's
mm-hmm.
pretty crazy.
You know, yeah,
it was,
last
well, you know, which leads us. What's that?
Just last week, they videotaped a sighting in over the Bronx, New York, in the daytime.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the thing that, the object of what we're doing here and the title is upbeat. We want to keep everything upbeat because you and I have had some experiences in life that kind of have transcended what the normal experience is, even for us. I mean, you had a healing of ovarian cancer when they told you the only way that they could heal that was to actually operate, and you went to a Christian Scientist, and you were healed, and you've had many healings. And then also you encountered UFOs. I've encountered UFOs, and
mm-hmm.
I've had my own transformative healing experiences. So with those things, in fact, we were talking a little bit before the show, and I talked to somebody about, you know, my recent realization of about the difference between faith and trust, and that trust is much deeper than faith, because when you trust somebody or something, it usually involves a transaction, a relationship where you actually give something of yourself to them, whether it's money. I like to use the example of a babysitter. That you can believe that somebody's a good babysitter, but it is when you give your child to them that you really have established both a relationship and a real trust. It goes deeper than a faith because you've given something precious of yourself. And what you and I talk about all the time is that because we trust in something other than the three-dimensional world, other than, you know, human power, we know that there's something bigger, and that this is a dream, and that it's an illusion, we go there. We give up.
That's
we let
right.
go and we trust.
Mm-hmm.
And we let go and trust. And I love this, the fact that I wanted you to do this this series with me, because one of the things that I marveled at was why did I, you know, the old adage, the teacher will arrive when the student is ready. And,
mm-hmm.
and you found that throughout your life.
Absolutely.
You know,
I've met one teacher after another, and at just the right time, usually. They always show up at the right time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it is when we're ready for the next phase. And I was, you know, blessed in my 20s to be searching through the radio, and I had gone to an all-Catholic school, which taught us, it was required that we take philosophy and theology each semester, which turned out to be the real meat of and I think the reason I went to that school, I didn't want to go there, but I applied to others, but it was the only school I was accepted. And as it turned out, it gave me a foundation of at least problem solving and looking at the world. Once I read, you know, Plato's Republic and understood what he was talking about, form, and you know, it was the beginning of creative visualization when he said, anything that shows up in the material world first has to exist in the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the ideal form. I mean, it comes to be, you know, from thought. There's nothing here that arrived from what man has created that wasn't first a thought.
Exactly.
I mean, Right. And so whether it's electricity or a car or whatever, and of course Plato said that in the spirit world, in the non-physical world, the pure, the essence of the quintessential vehicle already exists, and man ultimately finds it through implementation of the idea or the concept. So I was already predisposed to thinking that there's something more than what we can see, touch, or feel. And then I found Alan Watts, who said, you know, one day, I'll never forget the first words I heard from him was, "Who do you think you are?" And I'm like, what's this guy talking about? You know, who do you think you are? You know, where do you begin and where do you end? He said, you know, he said, do you think you end at your fingertips? He says, are you, he says, Western man's problem is he thinks he's a, an ego wrapped in skin, and that he's totally separate from his surrounding and his other people, and it's all about him. And he says, yet, he says, tell me how long you could exist without food. Tell me how long you could exist without water. Tell me how long you could exist without air. Tell me how long you could exist if the sun decided to fall from the sky, you know, or burn up. He says, so who are you? And so that began, and I had never heard that in 4 years of Western philosophy and theology. I had never heard this worldview that we are not separate. We are, as he calls it, egos wrapped in skin. We are not egos wrapped in skin. We are products of the universe. We're products of the earth. So I found this great, I've listened to this a couple of times. I remember even hearing it 40 years ago when he talks about cause and effect. So this is a pretty heady interview lecture he actually gave. And, you know, it's fascinating because you can hear him writing on chalk and all. If you let your imagination go, you can almost imagine yourself in the class and watching this eloquent and, you know, erudite, amazing teacher with his great voice and his amazing laugh. So what do you say? We can jump into it?
Sure, I'd love to hear it. Let's go.
Okay, here we go.
Well, now you know that one of the great problems that has arisen out of the Western study of Indian philosophy, as well as out of the tradition of Western philosophy, in relation to the whole problem of illusion, is the question of what is called in the technical jargon of Western philosophy, subjective idealism. This is the theory that all reality is mental. And we have to start by making a clear distinction between subjective idealism and solipsism. Solipsism is the doctrine that you are the only person who exists, and everybody else is your dream. And you can see there's a certain analogy between that and the Hindu idea that all this cosmos is the dream of the Godhead. But the difference here is that in the solipsistic doctrine, it is just you, as you more or less know yourself from a conscious standpoint, as a finite individual, and not much more than that, having this dream that all these other people exist. There's no way of really producing an argument against solipsism, because you can always say to a solipsist, what evidence, if someone could produce it, would you regard as disproving your idea? That's a very disconcerting question to ask anybody, and I give it to you if ever you get involved in philosophical one-upmanship. Ask a Freudian, what evidence, if it could be brought forward, would you consider to disprove the Oedipus complex theory? You'll find he can't think of anything at all. Or ask a theologian, what evidence would you find conclusive as disproving the existence of God? and he can't think of any. Whereas other people, if you ask them that question, will suggest an experiment and say, all right, if this experiment is negative, then we'll accept the evidence. And one of the classic experiments of this nature is the Michelson-Morley experiment, which disproved the existence of the ether, as at any rate in the form that people had conceived ether. And it's been generally accepted. Somebody thought out what would happen if there were really ether. So this is always one of the problems of solipsism, and we're going to see it's one of the problems of subjective idealism. But the difference between solipsism and subjective idealism is contained in the famous double limerick. There was a young man who said, God, I find it exceedingly odd that a tree as a tree simply ceases to be when there's no one around in the quad. And the reply, young man, your astonishment's odd. I'm always around in the quad, so the tree as a tree never ceases to be, since observed by yours faithfully, God. The great subjective idealists in the tradition of Western philosophy are, of course, Berkeley, the bishop, and Bradley, A.F. Bradley. And it's in some ways difficult to make out exactly what they were saying when they said that everything is in the mind, because they could never say clearly what they meant by the mind. But if you will be a little naive for a moment and seem at least to understand what you mean when you use the word mind, they will pitch the argument in the following way. You do not know anything except in your own mind. The whole existence of an external world is something known to you in your mind. The distance of other people and other objects from you is a distance that exists in the mind. You cannot possibly conceive any world existing unless it be an experience. How could there be an unexperienced world? That would not be a world for anyone or anything. Therefore, it would not be at all, because being is always being for something. It is, in other words, relational. The sun is light for eyes. Eyes are organs of vision for a mind. If there are no eyes, the sun gives forth no light. If there are no nerve ends, it gives forth no heat. If there are no muscles, nothing is heavy. And if there are no soft skins, nothing is hard. Because it's only in relation to a certain softness that something hard can be said to be hard. Only in relation to a certain degree of measurement performed by the neurons that things can be said to be relatively hot or cold. Hot and cold are the impact of energies on a nervous system. Energies at all are recognized as energies by their impact on something. So the Zen poem says, the tree manifests the spiritual power of the wind, the water, the miraculous energy of the moon. So the tree is waving. And we wouldn't know there was any wind around, you see, unless there were a tree or something like it to wave in it. And in the same way as the moon, when the water ripples, breaks up into a thousand fragments and shimmers all over the place, you see. We wouldn't know that the moon had this miraculous power to duplicate itself, to triplicate, quadruplicate, multimillionaire itself, were it not for the water. So these are the foundations of the idealist theory. You must distinguish between philosophical idealism and ethical idealism. They're two totally unrelated ideas. Philosophical idealism means that only the ideal world is the real world, that is to say, the world in the mind. Now, the theory...
There we go.
Pretty powerful stuff.
You know, even for... you know, it's funny because listening to this... and, of course, I tried to upload the entire lecture, but my Blog Talk program would only allow me to break it up. So I broke it up, and good, because I think this first 8 minutes is a pretty difficult thing, especially, you know, we've talked about this a million times, is, you know, and he talks about the dream. Here again, we were talking about this before we started the program, and he's making hairline distinctions, it seems, between what the Hindus believe, that yes, it is all a dream, etc., and late, where Western philosophy is seeming to go, that it is in the mind, and that it is all an illusion, but he seems to... can you pick up the nuances of what he's saying?
He says, but what is the mind? You must define the mind. And I like the term subjective idealism. That's a good one. And in my teachings and my understanding at this level that I'm at, which isn't, you know, I'm somewhere on the path, I don't know where exactly, but I like that term subjective idealism. Because what I teach myself to do is to go into my subjective consciousness, and as the Course in Miracles and as Christian Science and, you know, many of the Eastern philosophies like you referred to talk about, we are creating it in our own subjective consciousness, whatever our world is reflecting back to us. And so we can make it a happy dream if we choose. But it's interesting the way we run into these obstacles along the way. And sometimes it's very difficult to get to the place that we really want to be, even though we keep, you know, going into our subjective consciousness and visualizing and feeling and expecting, you know, things to happen. And sometimes we still feel blocked. It's very interesting. It's still challenging. You know, you can study these things and make tremendous steps forward, but there's always something else to work on. It never ends as long as you're here, I think. But he's
brilliant.
Well,
when we had our talk with Debbie Toomey last week, she made an extremely valid point that it's a mystery and no one will figure it out.
And we're
no one will.
Mm.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And... I think he's so erudite, he's so learned, he's so brilliant, and what I think later on we'll hear when we do this, we continue this lecture, what he's saying is you just can't, excuse me, you have to have, there is a reality, and I think he's agreeing with it, there is a reality bigger than what we see.
Right. Right, and I think many people that have the awakened experience glimpse it. You know, some people stay there longer than others. Sometimes it's just a moment for people. I mean, they just, you know, see everything from a completely different perspective, and they realize that it's beautiful. There's another reality right here amongst us that is very idealistic. The subjective reality that we can go into, where we can create, is part of that. Like they say, the kingdom of heaven is within.
Well, yeah, right. And, you know, we both studied the Course in Miracles, and what I found fascinating was the part that said, you know, if you're looking at a screen, you're in a movie. And if you're looking at a screen and you don't like what's on the screen, you're crazy go up to the screen and try to alter the movie that's being played on the screen.
It's never
the only way
happen.
You can do that, right? The only way you can do that is go back to the projector.
Exactly. But we're mesmerized and so much by the screen that we actually think that in our life we can change people and circumstances that are out there, when in reality all we can change is our inner world and how we react to things and how we view things.
Exactly.
And then
reaction becomes
out there will shift and change. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And we've all experienced that. It's funny because we rant a lot because, you know, one of my theories is that as you move up the enlightened path, or so to speak, and things become mm-hmm. more and more apparent to you, you become like that electron that's got kicked out of orbit when they introduce a charge to an electron, to an atom. One
mm-hmm.
of the electrons will kick out of orbit, and it takes a while. It becomes a free radical, and in the human body, free radicals are dangerous things because that's what causes cancer. But then it takes a while for that electron to find a higher orbit and get familiar
right.
with its surroundings. So, and you and I talk about the shift we're in now where, you know, it's hard to operate in the three-dimensional world because most people don't see it and think we're insane. And maybe we are, but we certainly are different, you know, working on a different reality. And
I
think, tell me what you think here. I think because he's, you know, so smart, and he sees the dangers of a philosophy of thinking that you're the only thing.
Right.
That, you know, because then we see what you and I talk about a lot, is that people make the leap that, well, I'm just an ego wrapped in skin, and hence, and you see what he was saying, and you and I always talk about this, the lack of the importance of relationships today.
Yeah. And you know, another thing about awakening is, as a person awakens and goes further into along the path, it does become harder and harder for people that they've even been very familiar with their whole lives, as we're seeing, to relate to them, because they are not on that path. They are going totally in the direction of the three-dimensional world and buying into the programming of that, where the ones that are awakening are going, wait a minute, it's time for this planet to wake up. We can't keep going in this direction. We're on a precipice. You know, things need to change, and they can see that a change is necessary, but the ones that are still very mesmerized by the world just want to keep status quo because they feel they're powerless to make any changes. And it's like there are two distinct groups forming. Now, he was a leader in that avant group that was out there in the thought movement. Absolutely. I mean, I was living out in Marin County when he was living on a houseboat in Sausalito back in the 60s. I remember everybody talked about how he was living there. I never met him personally, but he's always been considered, you know, a thinker in the forefront.
Oh, he was the bridge. I mean, up until that time, most of Westerners were immersed in Western thought. You know,
right.
And when you think of it, it was the Greek.
We created a very materialistic society and culture in America. We are consumers. The world looks to us for that. We've always been into making lots of money, you know, big houses, consumerism. That's what makes us tick. And, you know, the Western, you know, the Indian philosophies and that sort of thing were more non-materialistic. So now we're learning from them, and we're learning that, you know, being super materialistic, it can be fun, but it can also be empty. So, you know, we're all looking for a better way now. Most people, at least.
Well, yeah, because you put the power in something other than you. You know, that
right.
car. The car is what possesses the ability to make you happy. That house, that person, that relationship. You know, if I find the right person, I find my soulmate, then I'll be happy. And so you know, he, but you know what I think what he says consistently throughout all of his lectures is that instead of being annoyed by the other, is understand that you need the other. In other words, it is only by the other that you understand what you are. He says you would never know who you are if it was just you.
Yeah, the moon manifests itself by reflecting on the water, and the trees are the manifestation of the wind blowing. So without that,
right,
you wouldn't even know the wind was blowing. You know, you wouldn't necessarily notice
exactly.
it. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's, so I think what he's pointing out to the danger of this idea that we are the only thing is because, you know, if you listen to any great mystic, it's always that it's all one. The other and
well,
us
unity,
are all
yes,
part of
unity.
One.
Mm-hmm. Unity is the pervading attitude of the new paradigm. We're all connected. So what we do to each other, we're doing to ourselves because we're all one.
Exactly. And, you know, he gets into this deeper. This is, a very heady lecture. I mean, it's on a certain level, but I wanted to do it because it leads to this kind of a discussion that gives us a reference, you know, a launching pad, a point to take off and say, you know, what's with all of these different philosophies that exist today. And he's, you know, later on, or at least I heard it within the last couple of weeks in one of his other lectures, he says the two dangers, the two pervasive thoughts in Western thought are, number one, for years it was that there was a God outside of the universe, separate and distinct from the universe, which controlled everything. And that we are, you know, have to bow down and fear and adore this being who is
and predestination
separate.
was what was taught by many of the churches. You didn't even have a chance to have an awakening during your life. It was already predestined exactly where you were going, you know, what you were going to accomplish.
Yeah, and that this being in George Carlin, we were looking because we were going to thinking about playing a George Carlin tape about how people are asleep, but George Carlin talked about it last night. He said, and of course this God is watching you all the whole time and seeing if you're doing things the way he wants you to. And if not, you're going to be tossed into hell and burned forever.
Right.
But of course,
the guilt.
But of course, right. And then he says, but of course he loves you.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was always a strange concept. And it still pervades many people's thinking today. You know, the guilt and, you know, going to hell are biggies.
Yeah, exactly. That this isn't, again, this is not, this is just a testing ground till you get to the real place, which is either heaven or hell. And this was, which is pretty, pretty scary. By the way, if those of you, anybody's listening live, we'll be cut off in a few minutes, but then we're going to go the other 15 minutes because this becomes a podcast and you can listen to it at any time and get the part you missed. But, yeah, you know, I mean, he's saying that, so there's the danger of that philosophy. And then he says along came Newtonian physics, which basically said that the world is a cold and lifeless place with all of these rocks orbiting around a gaseous sun. And everything is mechanistic, and we're merely objects in this mechanistic world, and we're all powerless to the whims of this crazy world with explosions and everything. And any time, you know, we're totally powerless and we're totally material. And again, this idea of separation. And I think, and this is why I wanted to do this lecture with you, and I think what he's saying here is that you have to be conscious of the fact that you're in a relationship with the world.
The whole world. The universe.
The whole
even.
World. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
The universe.
That there is indeed a universe. that it is not all subjective in the sense that only I exist and this is all an illusion. I mean, in that to me is what he's saying. It's not that far off because the Hindus know it is all a dream, that this is, you know, if it were real, it wouldn't change. In other words, everything is changing at every second. So the world, our reality, is different from one second to the next.
Exactly. It's always changing. And, you know, consciousness is really, more and more, the scientific community even is talking about consciousness and how it affects everything. You know, they've done these studies in quantum physics where they realize that when you observe something, it changes it. You know, these tests that they've run, waves, particles, it's all very, very, very interesting now because the scientific community is even aligning with many of the things that he's talking about and the mystics.
Right.
And they're realizing that the world is not what it appears to be. And, I mean, they've even gone so far as to make the statement, matter isn't real. You know, Planck,
right.
Who was
exactly.
Nobel Prize.
In the Course in Miracles made that very clear. I mean, right from the beginning, it says, look at that table.
Christian,
you don't know what that table
means. Same statement. That matter is unreal. The real and eternal is the spiritual dimension, and that's where everything comes from. Everything that's manifested in the physical world came from the spiritual dimension as a thought that was ultimately put into physical form. And what is matter? It's frozen energy, I guess. You know,
that's why I selected this lecture. As we hear in our next podcast, you will hear him talk exactly about this, that it is, and he starts to allude to it, that he's saying, I think what he's saying at this point is there is energy, and you're part of
it. Mm-hmm.
And so to think that it's only you is a little, you know, is kind of off the mark in that you have to understand, and, you know, he talks later on, he says, you know, you have a choice later on, and it's what we discuss all the time. You have a choice to either acknowledge this energy and surrender to it, or live a very frustrating mm-hmm. life thinking that it's only you against the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember living like that when I was in my early 20s, and it was a very unhappy state to be in, very frustrating, very lonely. Oh, because I hadn't seen any indications that we were connected to this source energy and we're part of something much bigger. And once that shift took place, everything changed. The inner peace starts to come. You start to realize that you can find solutions and you can work things out, and it's all good. And I like that term, subjective, what did he call it?
Idealism.
Subjective idealism. And because if your basic premise is it's all good, then no matter what happens, even if you have a little upset, a setback, it's good because it's putting you back on the path that you're supposed to be on. Because ultimately, it's idealistic. It's happy. It's good. You can have a happy dream.
And when you start to, as you and I have discussed, when you start to realize, and I think it's that what we term as negative is only the other side of positive, that both of them have come together.
Right.
And, you know, this is what he's starting to allude to, is saying that the wind and the tree have a relationship.
Right.
And the water and the moon has a relationship. What I thought was interesting about that, he's right, you know, the moon will light up, I live right across from the water here, and the moon will light up the entire bay. But that moonbeam only comes to me in my observation, because I'm here to observe that thing. I noticed this one night as I was driving along the beach, that little narrow beam followed me completely where I was, yet the moon was, in other words, it should seem that the moon just has this, diffuses its light over the entire bay, and you would just see an entire bay lit up. However, you see that line, that reflection, that goes in a straight line right across the water up to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And it followed me. And I said to myself, wait a minute, that perception of the moon as just a one lane of light following me would not be if I weren't here.
Right, right, exactly.
So
you had to be here
that
happened.
And that is consciousness.
Right.
My consciousness is that this beam of light coming from this object in the sky is a straight line, when in reality, only I am making it that way. My presence gives it that appearance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as I read something about consciousness, that a tree will fall in the woods. That's going to happen. But
right.
It will not make a sound. It will not make a sound because unless there is an ear which has the ability to take those vibrations and translate it into sound.
Exactly.
It's not sound.
But I liked his little limerick about the tree because God is still there. The tree does stand in the forest. There's someone, something is observing it, be it man or God.
Exactly. And because we're all, you know, and he says it many times, he said, Jesus wasn't lying when he said he was the Son of God because we're all the Son of God.
Right, right, right. Yeah. And they say for about 300 years, people that heard him after he spoke got that. But then that started to, it was taken out of the teachings and the churches and, you know, people were turned more into slaves than these divine ideas that have dominion and the way Jesus taught them. And, you know.
Well, he has this great term, pedestalize. And I had never heard it before. Yeah, I don't know if he made it up or what, but pedestal, he says, what they did, and you and I talked about this just before the show, that Christian scientists see Jesus as is a very powerful man, a prophet, a teacher, an enlightened one. And Watts talks about him. He says, well, he says, Jesus comes along and tells us all that we can do what he does. Do not marvel at what he does because we will do better.
Right.
And he's and so Watts says the problem they had with Jesus, what are they going to do with this guy Jesus who's talking about being a son of God? And so because we can't let everybody know that they too are the son of God and that they have all these powers. So what do to him? We kick him upstairs. He says we pedestalize him. We put him on a pedestal.
Oh, I like that. That's interesting. Yeah.
In other
that's
words,
exactly
we put Jesus
happened
on a pedestal.
Yeah. And then
so that he's the only
like
one.
Exactly. And you become the miserable sinner who can never attain that in this life. You have to wait
exactly
until the afterlife. But the reality is we can work out our salvation while we're here, and we can experience the kingdom of heaven while we're here because it's an inside job. It's
exactly
not out there. It's inside. And it's just, it's the shift. When you can shift your thought to what you desire to think about rather than what's being forced on you from the outside as if you're just reacting, when you become non-reactionary and you become the observer, you are in the driver's seat. And that's when you free yourself.
And it's that's
because
true. And that's what yesterday I was talking about. I'm in a situation right now where there's a little negativity going on in my mind. It was a very unusual day yesterday because my mind is working the way it used to with all of these negative thoughts, and I was falling into them. And I noticed I could feel my body, the chemistry in my body reacting, you know, when it was toxic.
Right.
And so then I, but that's when, you're right, this idea of the observer steps in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you
then
become
you can
conscious
utilize
of
you can actually neutralize the negativity. And that's what Jesus could do. You know, they woke him up and said, what are we going to do? There's a terrible storm. We're all going to die. And, you know, he looked at them and said, oh, ye of little faith. And he calmed the storm, you know, or they needed money and he would find it, you know, or they needed food and he could manifest. You know, he could solve the problem because he faced out the fear. He never had the fear. He had dominion.
Right, and as the Course in Miracles says, it's either fear or love.
Exactly. And that's
those are the choices. And there's always, always, always one problem, separation from your source.
Exactly. And the divine love can always solve it.
Right, and I think that this is what Watts is saying here, that the trouble with thinking that you're the only thing is that you cut yourself off from the power. There's separation. Anytime there's separation, unlike what Americans think today, that independence, which is the big battle cry for everybody,
right.
Independence, 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 not interdependence. And I think this is
Which always taught competition, going right back to school, competition, games, cheerleaders, players, you know, competition in business, competition. Competition is actually very wasteful. And it's not unity, you know. Honestly, I thought when the airlines hit 9/11, they would all get together afterwards, because I was working for United Airlines at the time. I thought they'd all get together and say, you know what, this doesn't work. Let's all work together now and be happy. No, no. It just doesn't work that
way.
Right. You know.
Right, right. And there's a term, it's a German term. I can't wrap my tongue around it. But yeah, it's a philosophy, and it's come into vogue right now, which basically says the only way that you can really be happy is not so much that you acquire something and you gain, but that in the process somebody else ends up with less. So the disparity, I'll have to find it. It's a German word. In fact, I saw it. It's one of those things when somebody explains it to you, then, you know, you see it everywhere. Last week we talked about equanimity, and I hadn't heard the term in decades. And then that day I heard it three more times. But basically it's that idea that it's not just good enough that you get your dream and what you wanted, whether it's the car, the house, but that somebody else lost in the process and that you're better than them.
Oh,
you know, and that's where people can be happy, is they don't want to see anybody else. If you get the car and then somebody else gets the car, that's not good.
Oh.
I know, but American society works on that.
It does work that way because they always want to be better than their neighbors. And that's crazy. What are they competing with? That doesn't even make any sense. You're only competing
with yourself.
Yeah, you
talk about an illusion. I mean, where is that?
That is,
you know,
an illusion. Well, they were talking this morning on the, you know, people are afraid to go out by themselves to eat or to go to a movie because they think other people will judge them and go, oh, that's a loser. They don't have any friends. Now, how crazy is that? And the majority of people feel that way. So they don't go out by themselves.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
That's
right.
Insane.
Exactly.
The human mind is really...
Well, we're going to lose the show here in about a minute, but I think, you know, this was a great start. I want to continue to do these because I think, you know, first of all, to add Alan Watts to a podcast.
Oh,
just
he's brilliant. I love listening to him. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what he's saying, folks, is understand that you're in a relationship with everything.
Right.
And that, you know, you have to see yourself part of this huge energy and relate to things in a way that it all works, that the other is you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and unlike what we're seeing today, everybody wants to be separate, and it leads to nothing but unhappiness.
Exactly. Yeah. We're all connected.
So, well, great. Thanks so much, Rebecca. Let's continue, and we'll continue to pick up where the lecture left off right for today.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Bye.
All right. Take care, Rebecca.
You too.